Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ray Penny with New Jersey School Board Association. This is another in a series of conversations with educators on the COVID-19 front line. Today, and I'll introduce him in a minute, is Dr. Jim McLaughlin, the superintendent in the school district of Dover in Morris County. If you want to participate, you can log into Blog Talk Radio's chat room feature and type in a question, and I'll pass it on to him. Or you can just call 1-347-989-8904 and press the number 1, and Robin, who is manning the switchboard, will get your name and we'll put you up. As I said before, our guest is the superintendent of the District of Dover, and I'll have him explain it, Jim McLaughlin, which is in western Morris County. So welcome, Jim. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you. Doing well, all things considered.
Yes, yes. For those who are not familiar with the District of Dover, could you give us a little brief snapshot of the district? It's
sure.
A K-12.
We're a pre-K-12 district of about 3,400 students. We are nestled in a tightly dense community of about 2.5 miles square, and we border Randolph and Rockaway, Wharton. And our community is a working community made up of many students and families who are new to the country. Our students and their parents really value education. It's one of the reasons that many of them have made the journey to be here in the United States. And certainly they are supportive and work with us. We really have a tremendously tight community. I know lots of folks say that, but as a someone who's been in different districts and in different towns, I can say I've never been in a more cohesive community of people who are mutually committed. Everything from the town administration to different community agencies up and down the line, it is a group that is really committed to its children.
Yes, before I get into your first steps, how the community was hit pretty hard by COVID-19, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it's really, you know, and we get a daily update from our town administrator, and we've been in touch throughout the course of COVID. Our town currently, as of today, has 688 positive cases and 52 deaths as a result of COVID. Just in the last 2 days alone, we've had 10 new cases and another fatality. One of the things that we talk about each Friday in our virtual district meeting is, you know, how the town is doing, because it really impacts each of our students, not only in their own families, but in their network, in their neighborhood
mm-hmm.
network, and people who support them. And so I think one of the unique pieces that we look at when we examine some of the data from the town is that although COVID's associated with an older population, within our positively tested cases, we have 229 people who are below the age of 40 and another 275 who are between 40 and 60. So certainly, you know,
wow.
You're looking at 500 people who are youthful. You know, certainly I think that's something that is noteworthy, and it kind of goes against a little bit of the grain of what we hear so many times in the media about this being an area that younger people don't have to be as cautious with. So we've really placed a high priority on making sure that our kids are safe, and that's really played a lot into all our decisions.
Yeah, I do know it's a tight-knit community, and it's not that big a community to have that number of cases either.
Not at all. You know, we're the second largest incident in Morris County, and really very close to being the first. Unfortunately, it's not something that you want to be known for, but and when you think of the geographic size of the different communities that are in Morris County, you know, we're certainly nowhere close to being among the larger communities. But the incidence has really hit us very, very hard.
So before a lot of this came, you know, we all had a couple weeks warning, or maybe you had some hints earlier than that. What were some of your first steps when you saw this coming?
Well, the first items, you know, our first priority was, and it continues to be, student safety. So making sure that we had contacts, you know, for each of our kids, really encouraging families to make sure that we had numbers that we could reach them at, that we would be able to continue our communication with. And then within a day of closing, we made sure that we began meal distribution. Meal distribution's a really high priority. We want to make sure that our kids continue to have healthy meals to eat. So we set up almost all our sites that very first day of closing, and we've continued that through the spring recess and up through and including today, and we will also continue through the summer. But as of today, just to give you an idea, we've distributed 27,753 meals. Each day we have parents come to one of our six sites that are set up throughout the district. Our administrators have volunteered to be at each of the sites. We have a food worker at each site and a transportation worker. So, you know, that's been a big part of what we wanted to get set up right away. And again, that's been an area that we've continued to pay attention to.
Yeah, that's a big challenge for a lot of the districts. What about the remote learning? How did you deal with now, in the beginning, you may not have thought it was going to be until the end of the school year, but
right.
How did you start to deal with that?
So the two big challenges around remote learning are device availability and access to the Internet. And we have challenges on both fronts. We have been very – the way that we've dealt with that is being very global in terms of the way that students can participate. If the device they have is a phone and they're taking a picture of their work or participating through the phone, that's obviously an okay thing for them to do. We've also been very flexible in terms of meeting time. So if a student can't meet live, for example, if a high school teacher is doing a live session, we certainly understand that because the device that a student may have may not be available to them during the working day. They might need to wait till a parent comes home. What we've reinforced, and our teachers have certainly been supportive of this and have bought into the idea of being very flexible in terms of how students participate. The key piece is that they do participate, and that's one of the things that I think that we have really stressed, and our teachers have been fantastic with us in particular because they're the ones who are really in touch with our students, just to make sure that we've heard from everybody. We know everybody's okay, and a lot of our students have communicated when there is a need, a health need in their family, some other type of need, to let their teachers know and make sure that the school is responsive to that. So the other area in terms of trying to, you know, solve those two issues or get at those two issues, our students were not equipped with a one-on-one, at least in terms of one-to-one devices that went home and came back to school. So we were not in a situation that exists in some districts where a student already had the device in their hands. We did do a survey of our parent population for some limited iPads that we have had available to distribute those. And we also worked with Altice, who were a really good partner in terms of freeing up Internet capability, not so much through these programs that are advertised, you know, where you get 30 days free and then you pay. But actually, they worked with us to identify specific families and through their MAC address, which is a Internet address that you have on every device, to be able to open up internet for families who were willing to share that MAC address. So they've been a great partner in terms of opening up some capability for parents at you know, obviously no cost to the families. So that's been one of the ways that we've approached the remote learning, and you know, certainly one of the things that we're continuing to work on in the event that there's continued online learning past the school year in some fashion.
All right. I just had a little follow-up on that. Did you find – I know some people found that they – actually, when they surveyed, they thought that the kids had a device, but they found out they had to share the laptop at home with a sibling or their parents who were working. Was that some issue that – and that's why
yeah.
they used the cell phone?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. The and we were actually in the midst of a big move with our technology when COVID came upon us. So we were just, at a point where we were doing surveys. Online surveys are tricky if people are challenged by if they don't have technology. So it's really those types of surveys are best done in school when students are there and can respond to them. So some of our data wasn't as strong as we would have liked it to be. It's, I guess, just one of those, you know, ongoing reminders that, you know, to really continue to do this all the time. But we were in the midst of gathering that data when this occurred. But certainly what you've is absolutely the truth. That we have a lot of families who are sharing devices, multiple siblings who are utilizing one device, which is another reason why saying you have to be on at 11 o'clock doesn't 11 a.m. doesn't work, because maybe there's a younger sibling who's on with a teacher at that time. So again, flexibility is the key piece, and our teachers have been, I can't say it enough, our teachers have been great at that. They really understand differentiation in its truest sense.
Two things. How did you communicate your plans to the staff, you know, when this was first coming about? I think you probably have a weekly staff meeting as well, because I think you said that. And then how do you communicate to your community and the parents? Because I know some of your parents are new to the country too.
Yes. So each week, as far as our families and the way that we communicate with the families, each week, each of our principals makes a telephone call that goes out to the community, one in English, one in Spanish. Our parents who would like their messages in Spanish have indicated that. So the Spanish message will go to parents who speak Spanish, and the English message to those who have asked for it in English. And those updates, I think, are critical. They go out also in email, so the parent has it both in writing but also has it on the phone. And each week we try to make sure that it's with that critical information. We meet with our leadership team twice a week virtually and go over issues that that are occurring. We survey our staff every week to get their input in terms of what issues they want answers to, or what they're seeing that we need to provide to our community. So we have been holding a live stream every Friday, the assistant superintendent, Ms. Dalaklu, and myself, with the with our entire staff, secretaries, teachers, custodians, everyone is asked to be a part of that. And it's bulk of that agenda is made up of the issues that are seen, but we also use the issues that teachers tell us about for the outreach that principals are making. So we're really, and a high use of social media as well as our community agency. So we have a faith-based network in town that's made up of over 24 churches, and they've been great. All we need to do is ask, and they will get the word out through their channels. We also have a group that's called Connecting Dover, which is made up of multiple agencies in town, and we've been meeting every 2 weeks as a Connecting Dover community. Those membership meetings sometimes go as high as 75, 76 people in a meeting, And that's everything from housing partnerships to Zufall Healthcare, you know, obviously our own group, different churches. And it's a great way of connecting because everyone has someone that they're strongly connected to. And that's been a great group for us to continue to get the message out through.
The challenges. What was probably the biggest challenge in the beginning, and what do you see as the biggest challenge as you move forward?
Well, I think online learning is it's a challenge of itself. If everything is working, if you've got if you have internet access and devices, it's still a challenging way to deliver instruction, particularly when you're trying to tailor instruction to individual needs. Providing special education through online learning is challenging. Providing ESL or bilingual instruction is challenging. And providing general specific instruction that's based on core curriculum standards is also challenging because we really rely so much on all the things that a classroom provides. So I believe that our teachers are going over and beyond to make their instruction meaningful, but it's a new journey. You know, even those who have the greatest success with that will say they're still learning in terms of providing instruction in this way. I think the biggest challenges are the ones that are before us, and that is, you know, what comes next. And I know that's not necessarily the theme of today's broadcast, but preparing for what September can hold and all the multiple contingencies that have to be put in place in the event that we come back to school fully participating in a hybrid fashion or virtually.
Yeah. I concur. The biggest challenge has yet to come in terms of the reopening of schools. I think that's without a doubt. You mentioned the staff, and I think across New Jersey, I think everyone in the staff, not just the teachers, the building administrators, the central administrators, the maintenance staff, and everyone has really, you know, done a great job and really adjusted. Was there anything that someone did, one of your teachers or administrators, that you said, I wish I would have thought of that?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm amazed at is the novel ideas that our teachers come up with to keep kids connected to each other. So one of the things that I help out with is the social media in the district. And I'm going to tell you, it's hard keeping up with our teachers because they've put together so many videos, virtual experiences where our kids are showing their talents, where they are expressing themes of hope, where they're showing their work products. And they've done that with the idea of really keeping kids connected. And I'm sure you've seen some of the videos like this yourself, but I'm just amazed, how one student can throw a T-shirt to another student and they can catch it, and you can see this virtually and it's not really happening. it challenges my own technology skills for sure. But the vast amount of that, and because it's happening at every grade level in every school, and one of the great projects, just to mention one unique thing that just happened, one of our high school students and one of our teachers recently did a face mask fundraiser for St. Clair's, which is our local hospital right in Dover, and for the healthcare workers there. So what they did is they got together, and in a week's time they raised over $1,000 worth of meals from a local restaurant in town to provide to the St. Clair's health workers. And that's the idea of students and families who are themselves challenged, looking beyond themselves to people that they can give back to. So, you know, all that initiative and those types of ideas are really, they're really not to, to, I don't want to make it sound like I'm exaggerating because I'm not, but it's awe-inspiring, you know, to see and to witness that.
You've kind of been alluding to it a little bit and how the principals check in and the teachers check in. Are you guys, is it the social emotional well-being of your students maybe more important at this point than the educational
It's absolutely the number one priority. We talk about that as a group all the time, that in this case, we, you know, we're all educators. We value learning, and so this in no way diminishes the importance of learning, but right now it's how our kids are socially, emotionally, physically, that they are safe, that they're healthy, in all those aspects. So that's our number one. If a student does no work, we still want to make sure that we are checking in with them and that they're okay. We instituted, like many school districts did, a pass-fail system for our fourth marking period. And the message that went out with that grading system was the work you're doing is important. It's valued. It's celebrated. But it isn't the most important thing. Most important thing is your well-being. And we have a bilingual team at every school and at what we call a bilingual outreach team. So for any student that we haven't heard from, after a teacher's made attempts, we turn it over to them, and they've been remarkable at making sure that we stay connected with kids. We have a social-emotional group of clinicians who are in the district called Tiger Wrap. They have a whole group of students who they've stayed in touch with in terms of counseling and support and connecting kids, as well as our counseling department itself, to agencies, and making sure that if we need to do risk assessments, that they're being done. So that has been really a key part of the work.
Okay, we're getting to the end of our time. I want to thank Dr. James McLaughlin, the superintendent of the Dover School District in Morris County. Jim, I was just impressed with that last part, that it looks like the Dover School District is really focused on the whole child right now.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's something that can't happen unless everybody's committed as a team, and we have a great team. There's a theme in the district that's really kind of taken over, and again, I'm going to give a lot of that credit to our teachers in the community, but we have a theme of One Dover. It's a part of everything we say. We had teachers who made up T-shirts who they handed out throughout the community, so you'll see the One Dover all the time. But the idea of One Dover is that's the spirit, you know, that we take care of each other. And so, you know, I really I applaud them for that because, as you said, it's all about the whole child. And our teachers, our staff, as you mentioned, all aspects of our staff, and our families, they get it. Everybody gets it. And that doesn't happen everywhere. So it's something that we're very, very proud of.
Okay, we've pretty much run out of time. I'd like to thank Dr. James McLaughlin, and I hope everyone in Dover, One Dover, gets through this all together. We'll probably talk again about September one day. So.
Well, we look forward to that. We appreciate all the support from the School Boards Association. You guys are always there for us. Thank you.
Okay, Jim, thank you. And I hope everyone has a safe and afternoon. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.